Philosopher Khalil Gibran said, "Beauty is not in the face, beauty is a light in the heart." This is the Producers Lounge Podcast. Welcome back to Season 2, Episode 1, hosted and produced by GreaterAndGrander.com. On this week's episode of the Producers Lounge Podcast, we're chatting with Stephanie Neon, who began her career as an international model from the Bahamas, jet-setting with some of the biggest names in fashion, and has produced television shows including international hits such as STEM Cadets and Goombay Kids, as well as being a leader in the Bahamian film scene. Here now is my conversation with Stephanie Neon.
But yeah, I just realized you can see my weird dog painting, and I just have to explain it because I'm worried that you don't know what it means.
The dog painting?
Oh, you don't even see it. So now I'm going to point it out. And
okay.
Anyway. We're big Rocky fans. See that dog painting?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Rocky. So that is Polly, you know, the coach from Rocky. He painted that. And then Rocky... So he was painting that. It's actually in a deleted scene from Rocky, was it two or three? Three. Uh-huh. And when they're in the butcher house with him. And like he, so in an off take, Rocky went up and put that bullet hole in his head. Do you see that?
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, that's what
and
that
then
is.
And Polly got like really pissed because he was like, that's my painting. Like, why the hell did you put that bullet hole in his head?
And that's like, the actual painting.
And, like, and Stallone thought it was funny, you know? Yeah, that's the actual, that's original. Yeah. It's been such an interesting ride, this whole pandemic and getting to know people over Zoom and doing interviews this way. And it's been lovely in the way that I feel like it's been such a great way to connect, you know, and like learn about other sides of the industry and get to know what everybody's doing and just try to improve, you know? I mean, I think a lot of people I know in the industry did workshops and tried to, you know, improve their craft when, you know, in the Bahamas where I am right now, we were in lockdown, like full lockdown, you know, like it was like Italy style. Like we were our house. Yeah. For April, 2020, essentially like September. So it was wild.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. Like
you're in LA, right?
I'm in LA. Yeah. And like during the lockdown, we had the initial month where everything was shut down and then it was always very tenuous. Like they would kind of slightly open it up for a couple months and then lock down again and slightly open and lock down again. And then they came out with the mask mandate and everything. So it's been a crazy couple years, huh?
Yeah, it's been crazy. And, you know, I continue to work through it. I mean, you know, I think as creatives, we just get creative and we learned, I think, how to live in the pandemic and with it just in general with time. But it really was something where I was like, I'm not going to just waste this time. I'm going to make sure we still work through it. And, you know, I do work with quite a few kids shows, network shows. And I was like, you know, kids love YouTube segments. That's what they watch. They watch kids watching other kids do stuff like making slime and opening surprise eggs. And for some reason that's really exciting, but we like, you know, we thought like, let's make this, you know, this educational kind of fun show that engages like imagination, play and outdoors and gardening and art and things that would get kids to want to like, hey, I want to do that right now, you know, make a treasure map in my yard, you know, but things like that. And then we, started our show with Goombay Kids, one of my shows that way, where we were like, we're going to do this, build our audience. Everybody's home. The eyes are on the screen. Like it'll be modest, but it'll be charming. And we will do this with a director over Zoom, delivering equipment. Let's see what we can do. Now, not all of our islands were on lockdown. So we had other videographers on other islands that were allowed to film. So they were able to go out. And so we got the beautiful scenic footage and we just made it work and sprinkled it in. And then, you know, season two, it was like we were in a semi-restriction mode. So we had a skeleton crew. We were able to do more. But season three, luckily, this June, we didn't have any restrictions. So we took a real island adventure scripted route that we always wanted to do. But we sprinkled in the segments of the past that everybody loves. And that was almost like Sesame Street. Like they have a scripted, you know, scenario going on, but then they'll go to the number of the day, you know. So we did that so that we could have, you know, there's not many magical island adventure shows out there. They're just not. So, you know, not that are Caribbean for sure. And not that are capturing all that incredible magical folklore and the pirates and the mermaids. And, you know, you know that everybody's loves it because we've got Pirates of the Caribbean and Jake and the Neverland Pirates. And we've got like Mako Mermaids and all these shows that did so well. But But to take it and, you know, I'm from the Bahamas. I'm born here, lived here a lot of my life, except for when I was away. But it really is, you know, one of those things where, you know, I know the pride I have for the beauty of where I'm from, but also the talent and also just the people and what it is from that perspective that, you know, I think maybe the tourist industry, you don't have the same perspective of. So it's like, you know, been really fun to write this magical adventure where the kids go back in time to 1720 and are captured by Anne Bonny and Calico Jack. And then we have them discovering the lost city of Atlantis, you know, and they're at Camp Goombay.
Which in season three is the lost hotel of Atlantis, I saw.
It is. And that's where we filmed. They were one of our sponsors. They were awesome. And they took us into their turtle rehab center. And we had one episode that was like a staycation episode. You know the term staycation? You know that, right?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, because I don't know how worldly it is or if that was kind of like a tourism, you know, term. But yeah, so they're on a staycation adventure for one. And then they're all, and it's the season finale at Atlantis is where they are discovering the lost city of Atlantis. And that's like an epic island adventure where they have to race against the clock to figure out how to not disturb the course of time of history, basically. Like it's one of those. But no, it was really fun. And it was so cool to do what we wanted again, because we have had strict restrictions and we had this window where, you know, kids were out of school, and obviously the Delta variant we're all worried about, and but they weren't in school. We took all the protocols, the cases were low. We had a huge surge right after we started filming, so we kept saying the Goombay gods are on our side, but no, we did, because it was wild. But like, we were very blessed with everything, like weather and just, you know, sometimes in production things don't go to plan, but somehow we got everything every day we needed, and it was like a miracle that it, you know, everything came together some days, and we were just like, wow, somebody's on our side. But yeah, it was really cool, and it was a lot of fun, and I you know, it basically was like an island adventure just filming it, to be honest. We did 22 locations, and
oh wow, 22.
Yeah,
can I ask 22 locations over how many weeks?
That was well, you know, we didn't shoot every day back to back because we need to give kids a break, but it was definitely about 4 days a week. So it was like 5 to 6 weeks. Yeah. Over the summer.
Very cool.
And we had 6 weeks of rehearsals because these are kids. So we had rehearsals and fittings for 6 weeks before that. So it is actually, it takes a year to do a season of Goombay Kids now because of the scale it's getting to, because we go straight into writing now for season four, right? While we're still in post, you know.
Oh,
right?
That's incredible. Congratulations. So you've already been greenlit for season four, and yeah. Season three is just premiering like this week?
Yeah, we're very lucky to have a partnership with our TV network where they want us to partner with us for many, many seasons, and they're happy to distribute. We have a lot of international interest. We're very lucky to have international interest from, I mean, all the Caribbean kind of networks that we're hoping to spread it. We even have a Caribbean version of our theme song, but and we've had international interest from the States and Canada, so we're exploring everything. But at the same time, we just had our season premiere play, and you know, we have to kind of finish the last couple episodes and post, so you know, we'll package it properly. But we're definitely very excited because we got a lot. We had a red carpet event. We had like a ton of international press from that. That was very, very encouraging. All the feedback from everybody seeing it was very positive. So we're in this high where, you know, 10 months of very hard work is like, oh, yay, we've done it, and everybody likes it. And we're feeling good about ourselves right now. But it was, you know, it's definitely like it takes a village, you know, it's not a... It's like a big collaborative effort to make this stuff happen, especially stuff that's uncharted territory. You know, we are doing something. There's never been a children's show to this magnitude done in the Bahamas or the Caribbean that I have researched and been aware of. So I don't want to misspeak, but I'm not aware. Not that it's a competition by any means, but no, I'm just saying, like, it's amazing that, like, we're pulling off what we've been pulling off, I think, you know. And I'm just so happy to be a part of it. It's really inspiring, you know?
So I actually really want to hear a lot more about your background in the Bahamas. You grew up in the Bahamas, and I saw that you went to an art school when you were younger. Did I read that correctly? Or?
Well, I grew up in the Bahamas. I was born here, and I got into modeling. I was actually like at 15, I was scouted by Elite Model Management in New York, and, which I was actually the first Bahamian to be scouted by a lead here, which was a big deal in 1997 or whatever it was. So I you know, went to New York, and that was like, you know, a little bit scary because I'm like this island girl. And from there, it was just really an incredible experience. I managed to, my first job was Italian Vogue with Steven Meisel. And wow. And I was up for the cover, which was wild. And then I did Dolce & Gabbana campaign with him. And then he booked me again for American Vogue. And so, you know, if Steve Meisel books you three times in a row, you're pretty straight. So like after that, I was like really booking. I mean, Harper's Bazaar and Mary Claire. And then I was doing all the fashion shows and couture, and I was flying to Tokyo. And it was wild. I had about 8 years of a very strong fashion career. And that gave me a curiosity for behind the camera. And not just that, I had a curiosity for graphic design and marketing and web design. I mean, all of it. And I just loved the whole art direction, I guess, you know, like more than anything. And so I would pay attention, and, you know, I was very young, you know, I was 15 when I started, and I stopped about almost.
Oh, you were, so you moved to New York when you were 15?
Well, so I was in school here, but I was going from 15 to 17. I was flying back and forth, and I had an Olympic swimmer in my grade, thankfully. So he was also swimming a lot. I mean, flying a lot, swimming too. for you know, his competitions. So I didn't feel like I was this like only one, you know, that's getting this exception. I was like, you know, it was nice that Jeremy Knowles was also doing it. But no, it was very nice. The school's very understanding. They realized this was a very unique, exciting experience for me. And they would give me schoolwork and the assignments when I was away for these jobs. And the summer I would go and work the whole summer, and my mom would travel with me. And when I was 17, she started letting me go on my own. And from there I was on my own. And I was accepted to college, and I visited college at Hofstra, and I was all ready to go. And the agency was like, you know, she can go back to college at any point, but she cannot go back to, you know, modeling at any point, to be honest. Like if she's going to do that, there's this small window, especially for the type of model I was, that they wanted me for was runway, high fashion couture. So that is specific and young, and, you know,
so it's that kind of college athlete dilemma. Like, do you go for the degree, or do you go pursue like this limited opportunity in time?
I know. And it was a weird decision, because I mean, at the same time, I mean, I did miss out on the college experience. I never got that. I don't know what that is. You know, I got it kind of through friends visiting them at like their varsity games and stuff, but not really the real experience. But I got this other exceptional experience, and I got to travel the world, and I learned more than I ever could have read in books. You know, I'm like, I'm so Bahamian. I'm so proud to be Bahamian. And I'm always like shouting it to the hills too. So it's funny. But no, I really like, it's incredible the talent that comes out of this small country. Like, it's something that's really unique. And we are so close to the States that we can turn off these accents. We're not like, I think that's what restricts Jamaica and other countries in the Caribbean, not just Jamaica. Like, I'm not pointing on them. It's like, it could be Dominican, it could be anything. But I think, you know, that where the accents are really strong, it is harder. And we have Bahamian actors where it's harder to be able to switch it off. You have to be able to, because if you want to be able to go up for those jobs that are North American accent, which are a lot of the big feature films, that has to be one of the requirements. There's hardly gonna be anything that says Bahamian accent, you know? So that's something that we have to train our actors to do here and encourage, you know. So it's like how we're a little bit different in that way in our actor development as well. It's like, can you speak with a North American accent? It's like one of the first questions if they're serious about acting abroad, you know. But the great thing is, like, even just the shows I've done, even with the Goombay kids, like, we've had one of the children, the lead actors, got booked on 5 episodes of a Netflix show, Mighty Express. He was the lead actor, and he was flown from the Bahamas to Toronto for that, and he never would have booked it without the network credit on Goombay Kids. It was one of those things where,
oh, that's great.
Yeah, you see, like, that was the type of stuff, like, even though, like, you know, it's not at international level yet, the show, it was like, it's already advancing and helping and giving opportunities to Bahamians that would never have gotten it otherwise. So like that already, and I'm passionate about that because I was given that. I only had a Bahamian passport, and somebody, you know, plucked me out and said, you should model. And I, luckily it was before 9/11. It was at a time where people just given out visas. It was like,
oh, wow.
I literally went to the embassy with a letter and they stamped it. Like, that's how easy it was. Nowadays, oh my gosh, it's so hard because I go through it helping other actors and it's like they need 30 reference letters and bank statements. And I mean, it's almost laughable how much you need to prove yourself now.
It's funny you mentioned that because that's something I think a lot of Americans, particularly American producers, also take for granted, because as an American, you can go, I mean, before COVID, at least, you could go anywhere. You could go Hong Kong, you go to Europe, go to Africa, wherever. And you just sail right through customs. But if you're trying to come into America, especially for work, it becomes a massive ordeal that I don't think a lot of people realize because they're in their own like American bubble.
I hold Bahamian and Canadian citizenship, but watching it all from so long ago, it was easy as anything in such a beautiful world before 9/11 that we took for granted, you know, the 80s and the 90s. But then all of a sudden, like 9/11 happened, all of a sudden we saw stricter protocols on planes. That was the first thing that went down, you know. And then it like started to be obviously just continued to get harder as this whole pandemic happened. And then you mix that with the Trump administration who just tightened immigration. That was their thing. So that really, like, I mean, I had actors who had signed abroad right before, Trump and pandemic. And it was really like, they were doing well. We'd signed 25 actors abroad. They were got work visas. We were getting work visas. They were starting to do, you know, we had so many auditions for actors that were like, they'll get the work visa for you because it's for the short-term stay of the production. And it's a different country than America even, you know, so many of these are shot all over the world, you know, London or Australia or wherever. And it's like, they'll just supply it for 3 month short stay work visa. It's the same with Bahamas for the duration of the production. And then you're out. Right. So like, that's what we were like submitting them for, those type of things. And they were booking, and it was just sort of like all of a sudden the world changed. And we had so many talent agents coming down scouting, because it's not hard sell, like come to the Bahamas, you know, and they're like, yeah, come, yay. And then we give them like a free trip and their workshops, like, you know, pay for it. And then they also will be like secretly scouting, and they scout. And
so you have a whole
relationship.
Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but I just want to make sure I understand. So you've got a whole company basically working on bringing scouts and producers down to the Bahamas for what sound like weekend workshops and intensives, and helping to scout talent from the Bahamas. Is that?
I mean, I'm like just a bit slightly mental. Like I'm trying to build the industry from all angles. So I understand how much the talent has to be nurtured to have a TV industry. And so it really had to start with, you know, like 5 years ago, we thought, like, my partner thought he wanted to start a modeling and talent agency, which was the same agency I was scouted from 20 years ago. So he wanted to bring it back. I'm like, that's a great idea. Like, I'm here, I'm going to support you. So I've been like assisting, I've been scouting with him. I'm called the co-founder. I have so many connections from all of my travels that I help facilitate bringing down all these workshops to help nurture talent and whatever I can do. And we're also partnered with other acting initiatives in the Bahamas, like the Bahamas Artist Movement, that help to, you know, teach kids about production and filming and acting and things like that. So like wherever we can help to nurture that, that's really important. You know, now we've got TV shows on networks. That was one of my other passions. I talked to the networks. I tried to like pitch shows that I thought would help. We got quite a lot of shows going here now. It's only 2 years of, or three of original series in the Bahamas. So this is pretty new, but also exciting for us. And then a union would be next. So yeah, it is that, it's that kind of thing. Like we literally we have a modeling and fashion industry here pretty well. I mean, it's very commercial. It's kind of like Miami. It's a lot of catalog. It's all lifestyle, you know. Models do well here. We have our top models, all that. But acting, there's a lot of good actors, but it wasn't nurtured properly. And so that last few years with CMM Agency, which is the agency I'm talking about, is really nurturing that side of things that haven't been nurtured. So now actors here have their headshots, they have their reels, they have their resumes, they know how to self-tape audition. It's like, we're good. So we've been booking internationally, we've been getting them signed abroad. It's really been a lot more, we've exceeded expectations for sure in the first few years. But it just shows the demand is there and the talent's there. But we knew that, like, it was just about connecting dots, you know? So then I wanted to get him on TV, you know, and that was because I know the talent's there. Once you have the talent, you know, you can do the shows. And I had writers and already had scripts and we had concepts for a long time. And so we just acted on it when we felt the time was right. But like I said, it was a pandemic thing too, where we had to do what we had to do to build the show in the meantime with Goombay Kids, for example, because we've been talking about that. But there are other shows as well that we've been getting off the ground before and during the pandemic too.
And I'm curious.
It's a little industry. It's an industry, little industry we have here, but it's definitely like going in a very exciting direction.
That's great to hear. And you mentioned union. So is that the next hurdle that you're hoping to tackle or climb or whatever the sports analogy is for hurdles?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we need it just because everything's a free for all right now, right? Like, and like, we've got, like, I worked on DJ Khaled's music video a few weeks, was it 2 weeks ago? 2 weeks ago? I don't know. And then the Zara campaign, like casting on that and all sorts of stuff, like big stuff that comes down, but like every single person that comes down wants to negotiate different rates for talent and nothing's set or casting director or what. And it's like, it's just in this free for all stage where anything goes and people can work long hours and overtime's not required. And, you know, we're in this kind of like, but there's no defense because there's no union. And like, we are still in this building period where we have to have enough of a reason to have a union, but I think that we are clearly on our way and I would give it like a couple more years of our TV industry thriving because our viewership is going up and the commercial sales is going up and you can just see that things are starting to catch on. You know, everything takes a couple seasons in general, right? So you can really see now that things are like spiraling with the network and they're seeing the benefits of their investments. And I'm so thankful for them for investing in these shows because, and it's a lot harder than it's to do a show in the States. I'll tell you, it's a million times harder because we don't have the budgets of the States. So we have to get sponsors on top of it. And I go out of pocket obviously too, but it's a labor of love and I'm super passionate and, This season is definitely, you know, pretty magical. So I'm excited to see like how it's received once we, you know, start to get out there a little more. But I think anything you do that you put your heart into, it's so fun to see go from script to screen, right? It's like that thing where it's like in writing and you're in the writer's room, you're having Zooms and, or whatever, and you're just conceptualizing. And then when you're there and you see it at your season premiere, you know, screening event or whatever on the big screen or whenever that moment is that you see it, you're just like, wow, we did it. Like we did it through a pandemic and through like, you know, all the challenges of production and the summer heat and all of it, you know. Going back in time is special. That's not an easy thing to go, but that was my first period piece. We did two episodes where we went back in time. It's so cool because we had this big replica pirate ship here. So we got to do that. And then we have the Pirate Museum, which is like a replica of the docks in New Providence in 1720. So it's like a film set already there. You're like, sweet. but yeah, it's definitely like stuff that's just like sitting here. That's just, you know, right there waiting for you to do something with.
So I'm curious, like you've talked a lot about the process of making Goombay Kids and I've seen some of the YouTube videos that you guys have posted and it looks like a phenomenal show, but what actually is Goombay Kids? Like,
You know, I'll tell you what it is, I guess now, because it's evolved, like I said, a little bit, but it really is, have you seen Gullah Island?
I haven't, no.
Okay, that was a show in the 90s on Nickelodeon, and it was a revolutionary show. It was a game changer, it won awards, and it was basically about a Caribbean family with a set, but it was in a set in North Carolina. It wasn't even on an island, and I grew up with it, and it was like just such a fun show, and I guess I found it relatable, and the inspiration definitely comes from, you know, in part from that show. But at the same time, it really was, it just felt like a missing market in a sense too, like a niche, like, there's so much beauty and stuff like storyline and folklore and magic and tales and adventure Every time I watch anything, to be honest, I think that I see Outer Banks and I'm like, if that was in the Bahamas, that'd be so much cooler. Like, I just think about like how, you know, just because we have like so much crazy adventure here, you know, like, and beauty and, you know, drone shots and jet skiing and like, you know, crashed Escobar planes that you can snorkel through and, you know, the grotto from Thunderball. And like, I mean, the magic goes so far with us because we've got caves and natural wonders and all sorts throughout the islands. But it's just like, it's like the amount of film locations is kind of mind blowing. It's just that it's logistically a bit tough unless somebody can put it together. So that's what I'm really hoping to establish more and more now for that. But yes, I lost my train of thought. Where were we at?
What is Goombay Kids? I'm particularly curious about how the lore, because I know nothing about Bahamian.
But you mean like, what's the inspiration was the kind of question, right?
Yeah, or, because you actually created the show. And I think that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know. I mean, it's really just, I guess being from here, I always kind of felt like it was something that was missing. And I felt inspired because, you know, once I saw the talent, you can't even do it without talent. So once I saw these kids in these acting classes and, you know, just being involved with the agency and the classes around it, partnered with it, I was like, wow, you know, these kids are Disney quality, like that's for sure. And if you have the talent, you can do it. Otherwise, it's a struggle, right? So I was like, you know, I really think we can do this. And we got the writers together and we got a folklore expert, comedy writer. And, you know, because nobody talks about it, but kids shows generally actually are comedies. You know, like every 2 minutes, there's generally a joke. You know, that's the thing about it. And you can have adventure, but there's still got to be some like comic relief throughout, you know, for the, this just seems to be the way. But so we had to have some deep thought about that. But it really is, I think, like to represent, to give representation and identity for the Caribbean, and also in a happy, wholesome light, because we don't always get that. And I think that it's inspiring because it's educational and exciting because we've been exciting history throughout the islands. And I just honestly feel like it was like some magic that was missing from the market. And, you know, the thing about this show is that everybody has been gotten on board and I'm just extremely lucky. I didn't have to twist anyone's arm ever, you know? And obviously we don't have big rates, you know, and budgets down here. And this last time, you know, the economy and all the stuff we've had going on, and I had to rally up people and funds, and we got a really good budget in the end for our standards. And I got, you know, we had a director from Tyler Perry Studios, really lucky to have him. He's a Bahamian American, has done really well abroad because we did need a Bahamian director ideally for this season if we could. And he's worked at Fox Dish Nation and Balance TV and BET, and he brought a wealth of knowledge to the set, you know, because a lot of the people were learning about TV in real time on our set. But we had a great DP and we had, you know, experience where we needed it. But that was another thing we're trying to do is nurture our industry too, and give opportunity. But yeah, it was fantastic to have him. And, you know, he flew down and we were so lucky to have him because he's literally in such high demand.
And what was his name?
In Atlanta. His name's Lanthro Monroe.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so we had a big crew, you know, because we hadn't been able to do that. We had skeleton crews and did the whole aerial shots and underwater stuff. And it was nice to get back to production because it had been a while, you know. It had been like, I mean, almost a couple of years, but since being on a full set again, but with obviously protocols, right? Mm-hmm. Still nerve-wracking because the Delta variant had come out. We're dealing with kids, but because they were out of school, we tested a lot. We were, I think, safer. Like, I don't think we could film during school time. That's just when kids get sicker, you know, because they're, even if it's just any sickness, but that would halt everything. So, because everybody freaks out when anyone's sick. So I think we did get away with it, luckily. The surge here started horrible. Our worst surge started 2 days in our last days of filming. So we were very lucky that we just narrowly missed that.
Nice. And how did the show begin? How was it conceived? Where did its cultural influences come from?
I think there's so many places, but I think we're just so like have such a rich history. It's like such an exciting history. And also just, you know, like I said, like just so rich in talent. I mean, the original inspiration was the talent. Like I said, kids were getting taught characterization and scene studies and voiceover and self-taping and how to audition, but there were no auditions here for kids. No, zero. And they kept coming up to me like, when are we going to audition? I can't wait. And I'm like, oh my God, like there's nothing like you, there'll be commercials, but it's montage. It's never dialogue. Right. Mm-hmm. And I was always like, I don't know, you know, like what we're going to get. Cause you know, like I said, once the pandemic went on and the Trump administration, it was like, I couldn't get Bahamians in anything anymore if you didn't have American status. And, so, you know, I'm like, it's cool. We're going to figure it out. And because I saw how talented they were, I turned to the acting coach and I was just like, what if we started a kid show? Like wouldn't, I mean, like it'd be so inspiring for the Bahamas because we have a lot of other issues here that it can also help to nurture and address and educate on. Obviously things like protecting your environment and being kind to each other and kind to animals and all these kind of things are so important also that we can teach through the show and just fundamentals of life. And we never really had a show here. And so it would be like, you know, it would give kids like a sense of identity, you know, which would be really nice as well and opportunities. And we just were like, how inspiring and awesome would that be? And we got really excited by it and we planned it and we filmed one episode and then the pandemic hit in March, 2020, like a slapped us all in the face and we had to halt. And we got one episode, but that one episode had a lot of scenic footage that we sprinkled in our at home segments, like I said, that we just tried to launch the first season with, and our other island that weren't on lockdown. We just tried to get off the ground, but that was a serious, we waited 3 weeks and we realized, shoot, this isn't going away. Hey, like, I guess if we're going to get this off the ground, we're going to have to get real creative. So we did, just from behind our desk, basically did the whole thing, which is wild. But you know, I think a lot of people did that. They just decided to do productions from remotely somehow, which was, I guess, creatives being creatives, like just trying to make it work. But yeah, I know. And now we got to do something we're really, really proud of. We're really excited. We're really excited to have the government backing. It's just like great to see how much is snowballing and all the interest we're getting. And the amount of press we got this time was just very wonderful. So we're just seeing where, how far we can take it. And I think we have a really strong show, you know, like, I mean, so I guess we'll see. We'll just see. It's definitely something that's not out there. So, you know, and I know that Netflix, for example, is interested in the Caribbean. They partnered with the International Development Bank to start to invest in Caribbean and Latin American countries to be able to help enhance their regions, because I know they like regional content from every area, and those are two that they're lacking of. So, you know, in my mind, you know, we're not completely there. Like I said, we're still in post, but I can see that there's an interest and a fascination in the Caribbean. And I think it's, I don't know. I think, I, you know, we try, I just love it in general. I think it sends a great message. We have, it's all inclusive and we have kids of all races and disabled kids, and we represent all sorts of children, you know, and just definitely try to like send a great message with a lot of adventure with every episode. You know? But then there's also another kid show I'm working on that I had to done, that it's on airing now here on local TV. That's a STEM cadet. That's STEM.
I was about to ask about STEM cadets. Yeah, because that's this. Is that the second or was that the first kid show that you spearheaded?
No, that's second. So that was a charity initiative here at first, where they realized a lot of kids here didn't have science labs or science equipment. So Rotary wanted to figure out how to bring that to their classroom with a teaching tool of videos that you could do scientific experiments, but with things that aren't like cups and elastic bands and, you know, nothing that's expensive. Like you don't need a lab, you know, but you can get the same lessons across. So they were going to do these as videos. And then when they saw Goomba Kids, they were inspired and they got in touch and they were like, you know, could you help us make this a show? Because then it can be a show, but it could also be on YouTube and it can be taught in the classroom and it can be an educational tool all the same, but it'll reach more people. And I'm like, sure, that sounds fun. And so then we got a school involved, a Life for Key International School, which is probably the best private school in the Bahamas. It has the most resources, the best lab. And so we filmed there and we used their lab, and we filmed a really cute show. Like it really is cute. It's you know, almost something like an Odd Squad type show or something like that. But it's really like, it's a little more islandy. It's so like they're helping island kids with their phenomenon they discover and want to know more about. So they call the STEM cadets, and the STEM cadets will help them figure out this phenomenon, sort of like a Bill Nye almost, you know, but they're these four kids experts. So one is, you know, the science expert, one's the tech expert, one's the engineering, one's the math, and it's in their little lab coats. But no, they're super cute. And that's a show too that's been getting more interest than I thought. It's interesting. Like that's the magic of the internet, right? Like it's the magic of like the time we're in, that like even how you reached out too, like people can find people, and the internet's so vast and so connected, and things like LinkedIn. And I mean, you just really can enhance your career and make incredible connections nowadays, you know? And I think we're in a little bit of an untapped market. I think we're in a little bit of an exciting place where people are starting to notice that, like, wow, we do have the production value and the screenwriters and such down here that, you know, I guess no one took us seriously, basically. And we're not the Caribbean. The Bahamas is not the Caribbean, but we're lumped into it, you know? Mm.
Got it. Yeah. Got it. So let me ask you, and I don't want you to divulge any of your secret sauce or any future strategies, but you mentioned that the next step for Gumbay Kids and possibly for STEM cadets might be to a Netflix, to the States, or to PBS. Is there kind of like, what, for someone who does want to take that next step, what are the recommendations you would give them? Like, are there conferences they need to attend? Are there specific people they need to get in touch with? You know, what has been your findings in getting in touch with those people?
You know, relationships go so far. Mm-hmm. I would say that at this stage, it's relationships. I'm very, very fortunate that I've worked in a business and I have been on very big budget productions I've assisted and been a fixer on and helped with, and I worked abroad, and I just have a lot of connections. I'm very lucky. And so I've been able to give people heads up. I've been able to been like, guys, you never call on people. You don't want to bother people like that are friends and are social, but at a certain point, you know, you'd be like, I think this is the time where I'm proud of something and I want to show you. And I'd love your thoughts or any support. So yeah, there's definitely those great connections that, like, I have people that are interested in and believe in me and would love to see it and are excited to. And then we've got Lanthro, our director, who's got really close relationships with his network connections, and he already has people that it's in the bag, basically.
Wow.
To be distributed in like 26 countries. So we are, you know, that's, you know, we're in the agreements of all that, trying to figure out. But you know, I think it's one of those things. I mean, honestly, in season one, we got offered a distribution deal out of Vegas, and
amazing. Congrats.
Yeah, we didn't actually take it though. But yeah, we got offered it before it was established in the Bahamas, when it was just starting to come out. And we had dropped promos, but the whole season hadn't come out, and it was through a producer friend of mine who connected that, and I was very grateful. But the deal wasn't right, I'll just say that much. And it was something where we did have to try to establish this and make sure we offered opportunity to Bahamians before it became something that wasn't supposed to be. I guess that's the most I'll say about that. But we definitely, like, we just wanted to establish it here, and it just didn't feel like the right fit for us. But the thing that I'm really trying to say though is that there's so much international interest. It's been like, even the amount of people that rally around to do this, like we had a 45 man crew and 86 cast and 22 locations, like I mentioned, and full set design and prop design and costume design. And like, it was a full effort that you know, went far. It looks like a $75,000 per episode budget. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's definitely exceeding our budget. So like it was, we're very proud of the outcome. And I think that it was an audition for all of us as well. Like we really want to show what the Bahamas can do. Like it's an all Bahamian show. There's not anybody that wasn't Bahamian in it except for the actress who plays a tourist at Atlantis, the kids meet. she's a great actress. It was definitely just, I guess, just to show that. And you know, we definitely did it in mind to appeal to American audience and Canadian and European, so that it's not like a strong accent, so that it's not too much references to the Bahamian that, you know, that wouldn't be relatable. Like we definitely had that all in mind, you know? So, you know, and the director has lived abroad and seen enough now too, that he offered awesome perspective on that, because that was like, what we were really trying to do is make a very relatable show that wasn't just like, you know, only Bahamian kids would get it, you know? but the Island Adventure show is such, so much fun. Like the amount of places you can go with that, the amount of Caribbean folklore, the amount of stories is so exciting. Like, you know, one of our folklores is that the Bahamas was one big mass of land, and there was a sleeping giant underneath that land. And apparently the people were sinning too much and upset, and were making too much noise, and the giant got upset, and he got up and he hit his head on the island when he was trying to wake up underwater, and it broke up into an archipelago. You know, we have like all these like folklore tales that are just like, what? But like really like magical and interesting. And like, it's almost like a Grimm's fairy tale or a nursery rhyme, you know, but these things just aren't really fully out there. But it's a whole different side of you know, the magic of storytelling, right?
And that is Season 2, Episode 1 of the Producers Lounge Podcast. Thank you to my guest, Stephanie Neon, for joining us. You can find out more about her by checking out the show notes and visiting our website at greaterandgrander.com. Our intro and outro music today was Sunburst by Charles Thomas. Our episode still image is by Buckeye Beth on Pixabay. If you have any questions or suggestions, we'd love to hear from you. Let us know in the episode comments. You can stay up to date by following us on social media. Just search for Greater and Grander. Join us next week for more cocktails and questions, and until then, keep producing dreams.